It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM, WRIR, and at www.wrir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
You know, there are going to be times when a stair lift is not going to be something that can be put in any way. So having an alternate way of allowing someone to access services on the second floor of a building, for example. The ADA also sets sort of priorities for barrier removal. So the first priority is get people in the door. Make sure your parking lot is done. If you can do nothing else, make sure your person can get from parking lot or sidewalk into your front door and then help them from there. After you get your clients in the door, then make sure your shelves and displays are accessible to them. After that, fix your bathrooms. After that, anything else that's left over. So the ADA itself sort of tells you how important getting in is.
Kalina Eck, staff attorney at the Disability Law Center of Virginia, describes the laws that protect people with disabilities against discrimination in public accommodations and public access. And during this week's News You Can Use, you'll learn that giant car title loan companies argue that they are people too. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 284, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and online at www.wrir.org, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. Though they operate thousands of branches across the country, the nation's three biggest auto title lenders want Virginia officials to treat them as private citizens and afford them the same right to keep their financial records out of public view. The three lenders, TitleMax of Virginia, Inc., Anderson Financial Services, LLC, doing business as LoanMax, and Fast Auto Loans, Inc., have filed legal arguments asking Virginia officials to prevent financial reports they submitted to the states from being disclosed to the Center for Public Integrity. The annual reports include detailed sales figures, volume of loans, interest rates, the number of cars repossessed when borrowers default, and how often the lenders get into trouble with state and federal regulators. TitleMax, LoanMax, and Fast Auto Loans submitted heavily redacted reports last month at the request of the commission before its hearing. In defending the redacted reports, the companies argued in their latest filings that the reports constitute personal financial information that should be exempt from disclosure, just as it would be for any person. At issue is whether the reports should be made public, as the commission's own staff recommended last year, or if the information should be withheld from the public. The Center for Public Integrity argues that the state financial privacy laws are meant to protect consumers, not major lending firms. The commission's Bureau of Financial Institutions agreed that companies aren't people when it comes to shielding their finances. For 25 years, the Bureau has steadfastly construed personal financial information as being limited to financial information relating to individuals. The Bureau said there is no legal basis for keeping the reports confidential and they should be released. The Center for Public Integrity requested the annual reports from Virginia officials in November as part of an investigation into the costs of title loans nationwide. In Virginia, where nearly 500 title loan shops are operating, average interest rates were 222% in 2014, according to aggregate sales figures. Getting a complete picture of the full costs of title loans, both in fees paid and vehicles lost, can be challenging. Regulators in many states either don't require lenders to file detailed financial figures, including interest and default rates, or they keep the information confidential. Yet, in Missouri, where all three of the Virginia title lenders operate, annual financial reports are public records, and anyone can request copies. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We are here at the Disability Law Center of Virginia, and we're speaking with Staff Attorney Kalina Eck, and we will be talking today about the rights of persons with disabilities to public accommodations. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Would you first start out by telling our listening audience exactly what is the Disability Law Center of Virginia?
We are Virginia's Protection and Advocacy Office. Every state has one of us. We protect and promote the legal rights of people with disabilities in Virginia through advocacy, legal representation, and some education and outreach.
Now, I know that for persons with disabilities, there are various definitions of disabilities, depending upon whether we're talking public accommodations or education, employment, housing. So for the purposes of public accommodations, which we will be talking about today, what is considered a disability?
So under the ADA Title III, which covers public accommodations.
And tell us what the ADA is.
I'm so sorry. The Americans with Disabilities Act. The standard is to be considered a person with a disability, you need a physical or mental impairment that substantially limits at least one major life activity. And those are listed as self-care, physical tasks, walking, seeing, hearing, speaking, breathing, learning, and working. Or you have a record of having one of those impairments, whether that's been just a history of having those or a misdiagnosis, or you're regarded as having one of those impairments, whether or not that's actually accurate.
So that's a very broad definition, and I'm sure there are millions of people who would fit within that definition. So since we're talking about public accommodations, what do we mean by a public accommodation?
The ADA, and especially Title III, is really big on lists. So there is a big, long, detailed list of what counts as a public accommodation under the ADA Title III, but it's basically everywhere that isn't a private home or state, local, federal government. It's hotels, bars and restaurants, grocery stores, bus stations, libraries, daycares, golf courses, gyms, amusement parks, basically everywhere that you can be out and in the community and interacting with people in sort of commercial environments.
So that covers pretty much any private business.
Yes.
That people could get to. So what must these public accommodations do in order to comply with Title III of the Americans with Disabilities Act?
Well, basically, they are charged with ensuring what's called full and equal access to their goods and services. They can't deny someone whatever it is they're offering or give them fewer services or some separate kind of benefit because of a person's disability or their perceived disability. They also can't retaliate if someone makes a claim to enforce the Americans with Disabilities Act to make them repair their deficiency. And they have to, if they have accessibility features, like an elevator, they have to keep those in good repair.
So you talked about accessibility. So are there specific standards for accessibility for persons with disabilities? For example, things like parking or handicapped ramps or the width of doorways, things of that nature?
Sure. The Americans with Disabilities Act accessibility guidelines, which are the standards of accessible design, have a lot of very specific requirements down to the number of inches wide a parking space should be to be considered accessible, the weight of a door, how heavy it can be when it's pulled open and shut. The onus is on the place of public accommodation to remove all of the sort of physical barriers to their place, to their location. So they've got to remove, the most obvious is putting a ramp over some stairs or in place of some stairs, removing rugs that people could slip on or that have a sort of a high pile, those sorts of things. There are lots and lots of examples, and it gets very detailed.
So does the Americans with Disabilities Act allow public accommodation to take safety factors into consideration in providing services to people with disabilities?
They can, but it has to be an actual, based on an actual safety risk. It can't just be based on a sort of speculative risk or based on a presumption about a person's disability or the things they need to accommodate it.
So do these accessibility standards apply to existing structures, even ones that are very old and that are very historic, perhaps?
They do. One of the big misconceptions that we see a lot when we take cases to enforce the ADA are that people think that because their building is old, it's subject to some sort of grandfather clause, and there just isn't one in the ADA. If it's a building built before March 15th, 2012, one set of accessibility standards applies. After March 15th, 2012, another set applies, but there is still a responsibility, no matter how old the building, to make a reasonable accommodation to ensure equal access.
And that gets into the whole question of what is considered to be a reasonable accommodation under the American with Disabilities Act. Can you go into that in some detail?
So there are some limits to what a public accommodation is required to do under the ADA, but the changes that they have to make. And the biggest one is that it be readily achievable. That means you can do it without a lot of difficulty or expense. That takes into account, you know, sort of the nature of what needs to be fixed, how much it costs, the resources available to the public accommodation, safety concerns of implementing it, the effect on its resources, and the parent company's resources. And if making an accommodation would fundamentally alter the nature of the services that the public accommodation is providing, then it would be considered unreasonable. The sort of classic example there is a deaf patron at a planetarium asks that the house lights be turned up so they can see their interpreter. So that would obviously change sort of the planetarium services, but the planetarium's not off the hook in this situation. They need to provide some other form of auxiliary aid or way that the patron can enjoy all of their services, including the narration of the planetarium show.
And just to follow up on that example, so what would be the accommodation that, for example, the Disability Law Center of Virginia would advocate for the hard of hearing person who wants to enjoy a planetarium show, but obviously the lights have to be down?
Sure. Well, we would certainly talk with our client and figure out what a reasonable alternative would be. In that classic example, usually they say, you know, have them have a special light on the interpreter, have them be in sort of not an out-of-the-way location where they can't enjoy the show, but where they can still see their interpreter. Or they can provide a written transcript or real-time transcription of the planetarium show in that case.
Which gets us to the other side of the coin. Is there any... Does a public accommodation May a public accommodation require people with disabilities to meet certain standards or policies, especially safety standards?
There are certainly safety concerns, especially when you're talking about things like the provision for service animals. That comes up a lot. So, you know, when can a public accommodation restrict access of the use of a service animal? And the only two times they can do that are when the animal is not in its owner's control. It's just sort of all over the place, or it's not housebroken. And the other thing that comes up often with service animals is a public accommodation asking questions that they shouldn't be asking about the nature of the service animal. They're allowed to ask two questions under the Americans with Disabilities Act. They can ask if the animal is required because of a disability, and they can ask what task the animal is trained to do. They can't ask for documentation. They can't ask for trainings or certifications. And they also can't ask when it's obvious. You know, if you've got someone who's got a guide dog because they're obviously visually impaired.
And so that gets to another question. In more general terms, if a person with a disability is, in fact, claiming a disability, is the public accommodation allowed to ask either the nature of the disability if it's not visually obvious? Are they allowed to ask for some type of verification of the disability, or do they have to accept the word of the person with a disability that, in fact, he or she has a disability?
They pretty much have to take them at their word. There is a very limited sort of fraud kind of protection written into, you know, fraud investigation, I suppose, allowed when a public accommodation really suspects and has real reason to suspect that, for example, a person without a disability is claiming a disability because they want to get the accessible seats in a theater. But that's some very limited circumstances, and I would say almost never.
So when the Disability Law Center of Virginia receives a complaint, lead us through the process. What do you do to, what's the next step? Lead us through the process of investigating a complaint, and if it's a valid one, getting the rights of the persons with a disability enforced.
So my first step is to give whoever has called our office a call back, talk to them about what happened, where they were, what was going on at the time of the denial of services, basically. Figure out what's going on. If they've got any records of it, I'd like to see those before we move forward. But then the next step is talking with the owner or manager of the public accommodation, either by letter or by phone. Try to figure out what their rationale was. See if we can resolve the issue at the lowest possible level. If they are unwilling to talk to us or work with us or work with our client, then the next step is typically filing an ADA complaint in federal court.
And do you find when you file those federal complaints that those cases typically get resolved by settlement or negotiation, or do you have to take those cases to trial?
Very often, they are settled. With the accessibility guidelines, the ADA is a very clear law. The regulations that are in place are very clear, and especially in cases, you know, like we typically see, you either have a step that is, you know, that needs to be ramped, and you have a ramp, or you don't. You either have a parking space that is the right width, or you don't. They're pretty clear-cut cases. Because of that, I think they settle more often than not.
Are there special criteria for professional examinations and courses? I mean, certainly persons with disabilities might have some difficulty in taking a professional examination or even getting a public education in a typical manner.
Sure. Examinations and courses also need to make, you know, those readily achievable, reasonable modifications. Things like extra time on tests, alternate formats like Braille or large print, allowing recording of lectures if they don't ordinarily. The lecture hall itself or the testing facility itself needs to be accessible as well.
So throughout our talk, you've been mentioning readily achievable, which seems to be almost a touchstone for what a public accommodation has to do to provide equal access to services for persons with disabilities. So can you give us some examples of things that are, quote, readily achievable?
So in most cases, you know, readily achievable is going to depend on it's going to be a very situational determination. But things that, you know, when I'm out in the world and doing this job, things just start to stick out to you. Things like door handles. A door has to be able to be opened essentially with a closed fist. So door handles that are a knob, if you could replace those with a lever, like a levered door handle, is going to almost always be a readily achievable fix. And, you know, $12 at Home Depot and you're set. Things like parking spaces, making sure that when your parking lot is striped, it is striped with appropriate parking spaces. Clearing out aisles so that someone with a wheelchair or other mobility device can get through easily. In cases where there are stairs that, you know, there's just not much room for a ramp alternate, there are temporary and portable ramps that are available and much, much less costly than renovating, a step up to a public accommodation. So there are lots of small things that make huge differences when it comes to accessibility.
And so accessibility in this context, it doesn't mean, I gather, exactly the same access as a person without a disability, but it means, I guess, roughly comparable?
That is pretty much it. There are going to be times when a stair lift is not going to be something that can be put in any way. So having an alternate way of allowing someone to access services on the second floor of a building, for example. The ADA also sets sort of priorities for barrier removal. So the first priority is get people in the door. Make sure your parking lot is done. If you can do nothing else, make sure your person can get from parking lot or sidewalk into your front door and then help them from there. After you get your clients in the door, then make sure your shelves and displays are accessible to them. After that, fix your bathrooms. After that, anything else that's left over. So the ADA itself sort of tells you how important getting in is. Anytime you can make a change to allow people equal access as opposed to just sort of parallel access, that's what you want to do. The standard is do your best, and if you can't, then there are other options. But the gold standard is trying to make everything equal for everyone.
And finally, where can people get more information about the rights of people with disabilities to public accommodations?
Sure. Our website is www.dlcv.org. We've got a publications tab with accessibility accommodations information on it. We've also got a contact page if you want to talk to someone from our office. You think you have maybe a case or a claim. ADA.gov also has technical assistance manuals, design standards, laws and regulations, sort of some helpful documents for people and businesses alike. They're a really great source of information as well.
Well, thank you very much. We have been talking with Kalina Eck. She is a staff attorney at the Disability Law Center of Virginia, and we have been speaking about the rights of persons with disabilities to equal access or at least comparable access to public accommodations. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society to see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. You can get free legal information at the statewide legal aid website. This is www.valegalaid.org. You also may get free pre-recorded legal information by phone during non-business hours. These are before 9 a.m., after 5 p.m., and on weekends and legal holidays. Call toll-free 1-866-534-5243. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. After months of complaints and a series of stories by the NBC 12 On Your Side investigators, hot water finally returned to Ashton Square Apartments last week. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when CVLAS attorney Sarah Blos explains the law, what tenants should have done, and what remedies they might still have. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wakebrand. Oh.